Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, featuring spectacular plant displays and inspiring public programs year-round. Learn more at bbg.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. And more. Find us at Heritage Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday from, you know, I don't know. I really don't know anymore. I really don't. Till about 1 o'clock from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Nastasia the Hammer Lopez is not here yet because she has been detained by the L train. So, Matthew, how you doing?
Yeah, good. I just got trolled by the chat. It started auto-playing our own feed. We were going to be looped for eternity.
Well, so I'm sure Matthew will edit this out of, like, whatever happens in the internet in the future, but...
Yes.
But, yeah, someone or somehow we had looped our, what do we call that, the commercial before the thing?
Pre-roll.
Yeah, the pre-roll got looped into some sort of, like, I kind of liked it. I think you should go full Frere Jacques on that.
You know, maybe I will. I can stack them in the post. It'll be like 3 minutes of just 12 copies of that.
Yeah, and like, you know, what's the actual line? Do you remember? Something and more? And then it looped in, and you had it like right at the correct...
No, it was, the timing was good.
It was sick, man.
Yeah.
Everybody likes short bursts of rounds, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I can tolerate about 25 seconds of Frere Jacques once it's all in, right?
Oh,
like,
man, wait. Are we going to make you a round version of Classics in the Field theme?
Oh, my God. Well, no, because Classics in the Field is such a short thing. You need at least...
I mean, we need a couple more lines. You need to flesh out the lyrics here.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who know, like... Whenever we come up with a song, it's always just like the one line and that's it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of songs, since we're waiting for Nastasia to show up before we begin with actual cooking issues. Oh, and if you have a cooking issue, you can call in your questions to 718-497-2128. Is that right, Matt?
Yes, that is right. 718-497-2128. And in fact, someone knows the number because I'm talking to her.
All right, well, let's take the call. I mean, I was going to talk about my lack of understanding of Neil Diamond's Cracklin' Rosie song, which I've listened to my whole life and just was listening to on the way over, and I was like, the lyrics were kind of making me mad.
Well, we can get back into that after...
All right, let's do this. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Going on?
Josh from Norfolk here.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I'm recently getting big into charcoal grilling. And I feel like I remember you talking about the pros and cons of like hardwood charcoal versus lump a few weeks ago. And I was wondering if you could go into some more detail.
All right. I will. So we had, I don't know how long ago that was, Matthew. I'm not sure. But we had Meathead Goldwyn on, right? And Meathead is a believer in kind of compressed kind of briquette style charcoal, right? And he's like, he says it's more uniform, which I guess is true. Anyway, you know what's in it as opposed to the wood that's made in hardwood charcoal. So then after we had that conversation on the air, I went and bought a sack of, you know, not the vile stuff that's impregnated with garbage, but like, you know, the standard briquettes. I believe I purchased Kingsford, and I tried using them, and I have to say I hate them. I just don't like them.
you know, and this is not a scientific me talking. It's just I hated using them. I use hardwood charcoal. The brand that I use, I don't even remember the name. There's only a couple of brands that are available on the East Coast. I use the one in the big red paper sack, and I can see the chunks of wood, and I don't care that it's not always the same. I don't care. I just prefer to use it. Like the stuff, the way it stacks out in my chimney, the way it lights up, the way that I understand it, I just like it better. The way it feels, the whole thing about it, I enjoy more. Now, I've also never purchased, fancy Binchotan. So Nastasia's here, by the way. Hold on a sec. She's going to pass right by me. Hold on a sec. Oh, she's going to go behind me. What's up? Hey, Nastasia. So we were, we'll talk about the nasty train. We're talking about charcoal right now. So Jeremiah Stone and Fabulous, when we were working in L.A., Jeremiah was like, well, we're going to need to use the grill, so we're going to get some sort of Binchotan. Remember that? We're like, Jeremiah, crap on you.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we were just trolling and making fun of him. I think there is a place for, like, super, like, fancy kind of Binchotan and Binchotan-like. So, for instance, Andy Ricker, a friend of the show, well-known chef, has a line of Thai-made Binchotan-style charcoal, which is much cheaper than Binchotan. So the Nastasia, the people can hear when you do that, you know.
New.
Yeah, we'll talk about the fact that they don't trust us to talk anymore, but that's fine. So, I think that stuff has that super expensive stuff also has a place in that. If you're grilling inside and you need something that's relatively smoke-free, the Binchotan is good. Maybe it burns at a higher temperature. But the way that I cook now with charcoal is, in general, just like lots of heat. So Meathead Goldwyn may have a point when with briquettes because he's setting up these long snakes and he's doing these like long cooks at low temperatures and he's trying to regulate heat over hours with briquettes. And it's just like, that's just not the game I like to play. I don't enjoy playing that game. So take everything I say with that grain of salt. Like, I like what I like, not necessarily from a scientific standpoint. Matthew, is this making sense?
It is, in fact, making sense.
All right.
Devin on the chat weighed in. You didn't like the Kingsford. Awesome.
What has been your experience with carrying a Spinzall on domestic flights?
Oh, it's fine. So, Get a similar to 5.11 Tactical Rush 24 bag. Similar. You don't have to buy that one. That bag is rather heavy, but a Spinzall just fits. My only gripe with the 5.11 is that it doesn't fully clamshell, so it's kind of hard to shimmy the Spinzall into it. But you can fit it into that, and then you can pad it with like clothes and all your other paraphernalia. And a 5.11 Tactical with a Spinzall in it exactly fits. You have to kind of like push it, but it exactly fits into every overhead bin that I've ever tried to work with. The problem is you don't want to ever put it into a rolly, because if you put it into a rolly and you show up, unless you're group one, your rolly is going to like has a good chance of getting checked. And a Spinzall in checked luggage when it doesn't have a lot of padding is going to get cracked.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, I was carrying one once and I put it in a rolly and the flight person was like, you're going to have to check that. I was like, you don't understand. I can't check this. Like my whole business is, this is when we were just in prototypes. I was like, literally my business is here. This is my whole business. You're asking me to check my entire business. And she was like, yeah, I don't care about you. And so she took the thing and checked, and sure enough, broken. So I would always backpack it, and it fits. If you can literally, you can just put it into any sort of sack and have it as your carry-on, and it will fit. But it doesn't fit with a lot of extra packing, so it's about you placing it in the overhead on your own. But I've done it many times, even internationally.
All right, awesome. Thanks.
Cool. What were you saying, Matthew?
You caught me eating this Tate's cookie that I found in the green room. What am I doing? Devin, the dude, says something, and I can't find it. He said that you didn't even like the Kingsfords, and he says he bought some Embers brand briquettes at Home Depot recently since they were cheap. Internet says they might be seconds quality Royal Oak briquettes. He does not recommend. They were way ashier than the Kingsford and tons of smoke during lighting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Look, a lot of things. Look, people who are interested, I'm sure he's changed his, I'm going to give you another example. So years and years ago, Alton Brown, great, you know, great influence in the food world, Alton Brown. Ariel Johnson is, you know, friend of the show, is his first science officer now on the program. So all love to Alton Brown. Years ago, Alton Brown tried to tell not just me, but the entire world that the best way to cook bacon is in the oven. And that's just not true. I mean, like, that's just not true. And this is exactly why that's not true. He said, when you cook bacon in the oven, it cooks evenly. Do you understand what I'm saying, people? He said it's better because when you put bacon in the oven, it cooks evenly. Now I ask you, whenever you are at a restaurant, now on a burger, fine, but when you are eating bacon, as bacon, not on a sandwich, whatever, would you rather have that perfectly flat, board stiff, one doneness piece of bacon that is just kind of there as a stick and you pick it up and it's typically dry and whatever? Or would you rather have a traditional pan-fried piece of bacon that has some parts of it more done, some parts of it less done, a little bit of that soft yielding bubble where the fat came up off the pan and didn't cook very much, and another part that's a little crispity because it hit the pan more? Would you rather have that? And
no,
the
that's
answer,
nostalgic.
It's not nostalgic, it's a taste thing. I like variation in my bacon. So the very fact that a piece of bacon cooks more evenly in an oven might be great if you're doing bacon for burgers. However, it does not make the best eating bacon, in my opinion. And so, like, this idea of evenness as being the be-all and end-all of what we're shooting for, not really true, I think. I think what you're searching for in the kitchen is knowledge and repeatability and consistency time to time and batch to batch, not necessarily 100% pablum consistency of texture and look across the individual things that you're eating on the plate at one particular time. Is this making sense? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Also, nice use of the word pablum.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one. We got to pull that out more.
I don't know what that is.
It's gross. It's just like no taste. Like, it's like what a baby first eats, like nom, 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 pablum. You know what I mean? It's just like someone says, how was the food? All taste is a mush. All tasting the same, pablum. You know what I mean?
Can we market a product as pablum?
I don't know. I think there might already be a baby's biscuit, like a Unita style biscuit. By the way, Unita biscuit, sick name for a biscuit. And P.S., they taste good. I don't like to let them like disintegrate in my mouth like a teething baby does. But Unita biscuit is not a bad product and a fantastic name. Fantastic name. All right. So, on to what you were going to talk about, Nastasia. Matthew no longer trusts us not to spit into his microphone, and so we have these metal spit guards.
Oh, that's what they are?
It's not you two.
Won't say who it is.
Won't say who it is.
Huh.
But we've narrowed it down to 33 hosts.
Oh, wow.
No, I would have Nastasia teach a class on mic technique.
Oh, you would?
Yeah.
On how to lean back.
As far away back from the microphone as you can be while still being
lean
in the same
back
room.
Yeah, we got to get, I think Fat Joe lives in the neighborhood maybe, or used to. Now he's in the Bronx. Yeah, he's in the Bronx, I think. Get him to come sing lean back for Nastasia's microphone technique. Yo, where's my, okay, here we go. So, we don't have any questions, people.
Sad. We're dumb, though. We're real dumb.
We're stupid, but the lack of questions, you know, we get sad. We have feelings, right, Nastasia?
Yeah.
Not really. Oh, I know what we were going to talk about real quick. Nastasia hates me talking about Neil Diamond, so maybe I won't.
Ugh.
But I don't understand.
I think, because there's one song that everyone thinks, like, you have your song, I have my song, that should be erased from the musical dictionary forever and ever.
You want to say what it
Sweet
is?
Sweet Caroline, I think. Okay. For me, what is your song?
I don't know, like, every time I know my wife's song.
What is it?
Walking on Sunshine. She hates
that
song.
Oh, yeah, I know she hates that song.
She hates that song. I have another person I know that will leave the room if Pulling Muscles from a Shell comes on.
Oh, wow. What about you, Matt?
I'm going to double down on Sweet Caroline. Mm. I just can't deal. Especially when a crowd is chanting to it. I just do not like it.
Are you guys both the I hate things that people like people?
No, that just reminds me of St. Patrick's Day. What? Weddings that are boring.
Red Sox games.
Okay. It's not a bad song. Please don't jump on me. But if it was punishable with a short jail sentence, I would say that you should punish the playing of Brown Eyed Girl at weddings.
Really?
Oh, my God.
This Brown Eyed
Girl. That Brown Eyed Girl. You can't dance to that song.
Yeah, but
do you remember when I like to dance at weddings?
With brown eyes. Oh, also tell them how we were banned from dancing.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Let me get this. So, like, first of all, someone please explain to me a non-horrible meaning behind Cracklin' Rose. Listen, Cracklin' Rose is a store-bought woman, but you got me. Wait, you,
I like a guitar
going like
humming.
A guitar humming. Hang on to me. Hang on to me. Our song keeps going on. So what he's saying is, because at a different point in the song, he's like, having a time, listen to this lyric, having a time with a poor man's lady. What the is that? And then saying, hey, you're a store-bought woman, i.e. I'm putting you down. Hang on to me, because I'm going somewhere. I like having a good time. You keep me humming, but really I'm the one in charge. Hang on to me. Indeed. Our song's going on. Unpleasant. And I love Neil Diamond,
Traveling
but unpleasant.
Traveling Salesman, whatever song I like.
Traveling Salesman? Brother Loves Traveling Salvation Show?
Love it.
Traveling Salvation Show.
Grab the old ladies.
What? That shit's... sorry. That stuff's good. Yeah. Grab the old ladies. Grab the old ladies. What are you going to do with them?
Pack up the babies.
Pack up the babies and grab the old ladies. Everyone knows.
Wait, tell them how you're banned from dancing.
What? So we went to a place. I'm not going to name it. I'm not going to name it because I don't name places.
We're also not going to say who we were with or any of that stuff.
Okay. I won't even give like the normal hints that I normally give.
We threw a party for a band.
We threw a party for a band. It was fun. We had a fun time, as Wesley Willis would say. and we're there. And so Nastassi and I, first of all, here's something people don't get me started. Seriously, yeah. I'm like 48, sure, right? And, you know.
No, you said in a previous episode, you said your funk motor is not broken.
It's not broken. It takes longer to start, right?
That's not true, Dave.
It's like an old crank car from the 20s.
We were at a concert before, and Dave was the only one headbanging.
Okay, so check this out. We're at this place called Elsewhere in Brooklyn, and we're on the roof. Yeah, we're on the roof. And so Nastassia, in typical Nastassia form, is like, crap on this, we're going up front. Now me, as a woman, no one's going to like punch her. They give her bad looks, but no one's going to punch her. But she gets mad at me for not like zooming in behind her while she is like throwing elbow checks to all the people who have been there waiting, right?
Yeah. Prepping them to be really mad with you.
Oh, yeah.
Ding, ding, ding. So anyway, so finally, I'm like, sorry. I literally had to say, see that crazy person who just plowed through you? I have to follow her.
Oh, that's what
and
you
the,
said?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the guy was like, okay. And so like, I went in. So we end up on, there's these benches surrounding the main, you know, area. And they have this wire fence, right? But not like a cable fence.
Yeah.
That has a lot of bounce to it. So we realize that we can stand on this like narrow bench, but if we loop our hands over the fence, we can seriously headbang.
And we did.
And we did. And no one else did. No one else.
It's also, yeah, whatever.
Anyway, it was a headbanging song.
It was a headbanging song.
I stopped headbanging in the night. It's one of those songs that's like, you know, la 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 la, jugga junk junk junk, you know? And during the jugga junks, right?
We went for it.
Because... I know from experience that when you go full junk, 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 you want someone in the audience to go for it.
You were doing a service.
Yes.
You're in the hospitality industry.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's part of the, there. It, people, this is where Peter Kim from the Museum of Food and Drink is wrong.
Yeah.
There is, and even though we met Wyatt Cenac, or I've met him a couple times, but he was at the MOFAD Gala. Did we talk about this on the air?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Wyatt Sinak, famous comedian, does not believe that there is a social contract between the viewer and the comedian. That is all on the comedian to do a good job and make the guest laugh, right? Or smile or whatever. I disagree. I think there's always a sort of contract. If you want the best performance from a band, let them know that you like it, right?
Yeah, we were the only ones, though.
We're the only ones.
Well, speaking of people letting you know they like it, you have a caller on the air.
Oh, sweet. We hope they like it. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Going well.
Awesome. So I'm calling in from southern Germany, actually. And I, it's just about Vasen or Oktoberfest season.
Steht es jetzt ein Hofbräuhaus, ein, zwei Suffe? In München steht ein Hofbräuhaus. What?
No, like I'm actually not. So I'm not in Munich. I'm in southwest Germany, near Stuttgart.
Right.
Yeah. So actually, for us, it's the Vasen, the sort of festival that they do here. Yeah. I don't know if you. Well, anyway.
I've never been. Nastasia's been and has a dirndl.
It's great. It's
fine. Nastasia owns a dirndl, and if you guys are very nice to her, maybe she'll post a picture of herself in the dirndl.
I only wear what's it called? Under it.
She wears long johns with reindeer on it under the dirndl. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, actually, I was told to buy mine today, my Lederhosen, and there's just no way I'm going to do that. But
oh, well, Lederhosen is cool, man.
But that's maybe, but I don't really feel like wearing leather. Anyway, no.
All right,
but that's also an Oktoberfest thing, and
yeah.
Anyway, no. So my problem that I was having was I wanted to try and cook something as like a little snack or something that we could kind of eat, and so I bought some pork belly, and it has the bones in, the ribs. And try as I might, I couldn't find anything for everything. You know, as you search, you kind of go through, and it says, like, oh, yeah, do pork belly, do this, or, oh, you're going to do ribs, do that. And I couldn't find anything that really gave me a clear answer on a fun way to cook pork belly with the ribs. And I was wondering if you could kind of, like, lean me towards one direction or another.
It's got the ribs or the cartilage pieces or both?
Both.
So it's extending into the, so you have the whole, that whole plate section. It's almost like the whole side flitch up to how long up into the ribs is it?
Well, probably not that very far. I wouldn't be able to tell right now. I have it at home instead of on me. But I wouldn't go super, super far. I don't think it's crazy big.
Right. I mean,
or crazy long into it. So,
I mean, my favorite pork bellies are like, you know, Wiley's old pork belly at WD-50, but you know, it takes a long time. So he would first cure it with, he would use a little bit of, nitrites on it. And then he would like salt and sugar in vac, press that down, let that go for a couple of days and cure. Then he would low temp it for 72 hours. Then he would crisp the skin up, and you could do the same even with still got the skin on, right?
Yeah.
You could do that. That's delicious. That's firmer. And then you could slice it. If there's a little area of the bone you could French out, you then could have little handles on it that people could pick up, right? Which might be fun, because that way of cooking the pork belly leaves it moist and tender, but still liftable, i.e. like not completely gelatinous, right? Like another thing is like, you know, bones be damned, ain't nothing better than like, you know, tung po style, like braised, like Chinese style braised pork, you know, if you want to do it in that fashion, right? Another thing, mm-hmm. like if you're going to be in Germany, you could almost do like a Schweinshaxe version where you do a relatively long, you salt it and stuff, do like a long braise on it and then deep, you know, cut it into pieces again with the little handle, deep fry those suckers and serve them Schweinshaxe style because everybody likes that. Are you familiar with American invention of the Midwest called pig wings?
No, I'm not.
Pig wings are like mini Schweinshaxe where they at the packing plant, they take some, like, one of the bones in the legs, a smaller one, and make, like, mini Schweinshaxe with it so that they're like, remember we had those in Milwaukee? Those things are sick. Mm-hmm. For those of you that have never had Schweinshaxe, it's the best, It's one of my favorite pork. It's just a pork extravaganza. You like that stuff? People in Germany love that stuff, right? You like that stuff, don't you?
Yeah, no, but that's, yeah, and that's what I was kind of going for. I was like, well, how can I make something that would kind of be like that, you know? Because
yeah.
I know that they love it here, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would work. I mean, the issue is that the advantage of the way that Wiley was doing it is the disadvantage of like Tung Po pork style is that the skin stays kind of gelatinous and gooey, which is delicious, right? But it's not going to give you that crackling, going back to the word crackling, that crackling like hit that you get off of like a Schweinshaxe. But, you know, we used to do pork belly, yeah, doing that kind of long and low, whether you do a traditional braise or not, then cool it down, and then crackle, render out the skin down almost like a duck breast, and that is good. That tastes good. Or you could do the prickle and like a little bit of basicity to make sure it browns, and then broil crackle it, and then you'll get more of those kind of blisters that you get on the skin in a more blistered pig sitch. The problem with deep frying the pork belly entire is that you will most likely, by the time the skin gets crispity, crackly, good, you most likely will overcook relatively large portions of the meat.
Yeah, it was something I'd like to avoid if I could. I mean,
right.
I think doing it whole would be kind of hard as well.
What do you mean, frying it whole?
I don't have that large of a deep fryer.
Yeah,
I don't think I could fry it whole.
Yeah, so like the way to fry things, I mean, I can't recommend it. It's not safe at all. What the hell am I talking about?
Yeah.
So okay, I was going to say like don't ever do this, but like, okay, never mind. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
But there are ways to do, for instance, relatively large, shallow fries with baste over so that you can fry just the bottom of it in kind of a shallow fry situation and then do like a hot oil baste over to rewarm the top. And that'll allow you to cook the skin more in a deep frying. But most of those involve extreme risks of oil fire.
Yep, and he's not going to do them, so.
And self-immolation.
Yep, thank you.
Speaking as someone who has immolated themselves on more than one occasion.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And by the way,
sorry.
I'll say one of my life goals is to never catch on fire again.
That's good.
I'm like at least halfway through my life now, and I'm going to say,
Dave, you don't even know when your life is going to end.
I know that I'm not going to make it past 96. Anyway, point being that, I mean, maybe I will, but I mean, odds are not. My point being that, like, I just hope that my catching on fire days are behind me. I think it's like, it's, I can ask for that at this point in my life.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
I hope for it for you too.
Can
I just before what was the temperature that you were going at for 72 hours?
Oh, geez, I don't remember. Somewhere in the low 60s, I think we did.
Low 60s.
So low 60s.
So
I have to look it up. It's been many years since I've done a 72-hour pork belly. It's in Wiley's cookbook. So if you have the WD-50 cookbook, check it out. The recipe's in there.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
All right.
Are you enjoying this show? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. I'm Luke Griffin, and I'm the host of Bushwick Podcast. Each week, we share the remarkable stories of how artists, activists, and entrepreneurs collide in Bushwick, a special Brooklyn neighborhood that's changing faster by the day.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, featuring spectacular plant displays and inspiring public programs year-round. Harvest Homecoming, an old-school fall foliage festival, comes to Brooklyn Botanic Garden on Sunday, October 20th. Celebrate cider season with New York cider houses and kombucha makers, bringing hard and soft ciders and fermented drinks to try or buy. A pop-up farmers market will feature heritage apples from local orchards. Groove to the sounds of fresh Americana music and world beats throughout the day. Bring your friends and family and make a day of it with hay rides, lawn games, a children's Halloween costume parade, and more, all in the heart of Brooklyn. Learn more about Brooklyn Botanic Garden at bbg.org.
Wait, so to go back just briefly to what Nastasia was saying before, we go into this place.
Well, your funk motor is already like at what speed?
Oh, well, we had been at a concert already, right? So I'm already primed.
Then we went to a
the
bar.
Pump already has liquid in it.
Yeah.
I'm in a constant. So we show up And I'm like, you know what, Nastasia?
It's 3 a.m. also.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what, Nastasia? I hate this place. And Nastasia's like, yeah, whatever. And they start playing really good music, including, as we all know, that I enjoy Travis Scott.
Yep.
They start playing some Travis Scott. They start playing, like, you know, some older hip-hop that I know, some, like, Biggie, this kind of stuff. I'm like, all right.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so, like, we're going. And then they make us move to a different spot.
So we keep dancing.
So we keep dancing in the different spot. And then they're about to start their floor show, right?
Which is
and so this
crazy.
Guy comes in. This guy comes in, an American dude, in his best Russian oligarch outfit. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you know, if you're a Russian oligarch, you could pull it off. If you're just some, like, 25-year-old American guy, don't try it. You know what I'm saying? He comes up, he's like, I need these spots for my people. And, like, shoos us out. So then, he as he does this to us, Nastasia goes, I hate this! I hate this! Like, out loud in the club, like, super loud. And just keeps repeating that. And I was like, you know what, Nastasia? I've never been more proud of you in my whole life. And we walked out.
Yeah.
We're like, you know what?
No, we watched the show and then we
watched like 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not shocked. I don't care. And we left.
I mean, a little bit shocked.
You were a little bit shocked. I wasn't.
Man defecated on stage.
Man, whatever. I don't want to get into it. Yeah. Anyway, point being that, like, I found the hospitality wanting.
Although, Dave, you don't realize that the bar before we were there, I had to do that to people. I had to be like,
no.
Out of these
seats. No. If you have a reserved table, that's a reserved table.
Okay.
We were told by staff to go to a place and then were ejected from said place twice. Mm-hmm. One, it's like, there's another bar I'm not going to name that I will never go to again. Well-regarded bar. Nice place. I will never go there again because I was placed at a seat and then I was made to leave because they made a mistake. Mm. Once someone is seated, once you have given someone a place, it is their place. It is now your fault, hospitality person. That person is now your guest, and any other thing you need to do, you need to do. You're like this, you can't. Once you give someone a space, it's your fault.
What about when there's somebody sitting at a bar and there's two seats on either side and you have a two top coming in? Do you ask them to move down?
You can, like, it depends. If you have a good rapport with the guest, right, you can ask them. They're not obligated to do anything. You can ask them if they mind moving over one. If they do move over one, it is then also nice to either
give them something
or, you know, VIP them somehow because they have done you a favor. Because how much obligation do they have to move? Zero.
Also, we should give a shout out to Pablo.
Well, we're going to talk about.
Okay. Well, we don't have a lot of time because we have a 1 o'clock show.
Well, also, a very important question from the chat. Is an oligarch outfit a gaudy suit or some sort of two-piece velour Adidas tracksuit?
Oh, I could be either. This was the former.
Good to know.
Yeah. Ooh, now I'm kind of wishing this dude had, like, the kind of shiny tracksuit on.
Yeah.
It's definitely the better option.
Okay, let's get to the other side.
All right. So, a couple of things. One, last night we went to the old Lightning pop-up at Pepe's underneath Grand Tivoli. And tonight, I don't know if there's still reservations available, but look it up online. They're doing a pop-up at Hunky Dory, Claire Sprouse's place in Brooklyn. So here's the deal. So Pablo, how do you pronounce his last name? Moi?
Moi. Yeah.
Pablo Moi and Steve Lavigny. Lavigny? Is
that I don't know.
You're Italian adjacent.
Lavigny, yeah.
Yeah, Lavigny, yeah. So,
and his wife. Who's great? Roxanna.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so here's what they did. They have a bar in L.A., in Venice, I guess. Is it considered L.A.?
Yeah.
Is that L.A.? Same?
Yeah.
Okay. They have a bar, and their shtick, Steve and Pablo, is that they travel around, and they find liquor stores.
In Southern California.
And no, everywhere.
Oh, really?
Everywhere. Some of it's from Southern California. They happen to live in that area, so a lot of it's there. Everywhere that have old bottles of liquor, and then they buy it all. So, like, they'll look on a shelf, they'll see an old bottle, and they'll be like, yo, we had a conversation with them last night about it. Yo, you
like
got more of that in back?
Crappy liquor stores.
Yeah, crappy. I'm not going to tell you their secrets, but they have a tried and true Like they,
oh, yeah.
They look for a trifecta. No, yeah. I'll give
don't
you one
it,
of
don't
them.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
I'll give
don't
one.
Don't say it, Dave. No. Don't say it. Don't say it. It's mean. Dude, what's give mean? Away this. No.
The secrets. Okay, I won't tell you what they are. There are three things.
It's very funny.
If those three
say.
Things, if they call in or some point give us permission to say what those three things are, there are three. They troll neighborhoods, and if they see these three things in conjunction. And they are easy to
they
see
know
people.
That there is a pot at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the rainbow leprechaun sitch, and they know they're going to get good bottles.
Yeah.
So they travel the country and they find these old bottles that you know the people are happy to get rid of because they're just sitting there collecting dust and have been for decades. These are decades old bottles, but they're worth like hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars to people who know what they are. So they aggregate these and they have this amazing collection of liquor, and they brought it out east for their pop up. Now.
You know what, Dave? When we travel to other places, we should try doing that. And then...
But I don't know anything about...
No, I know.
I don't know anything. I wouldn't know.
See if we can find the trifecta, and then we'll call them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like FaceTime
yeah,
them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, because the fun thing about the bar, right, is... Like, okay, I gotta be honest here. I mentally have a problem with spending $8 jillion on something that I'm going to convert from liquid to urine very quickly, right? It's just mentally I don't have it in me to enjoy an absurdly expensive sip of liquid. And Nastassia, you're the same way.
Yes, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we didn't order any of the crazy stuff. Some people, like, I mean, I understand why people really enjoy doing that. But what makes it really fun... Really, really fun about, and that was, by the way, I'm such a jerk. I'm such a butt munch. We show up at the thing.
Oh my God, yeah.
We're there with Jack Schramm, Jack Schramm, friend of the show, head bartender, Existing Conditions, Nastassia Lopez, and myself. And by the way, we went there a week early.
Because we got the date wrong.
We walk and we're like, is this Pepe's? Where's Pablo? What's going on? And there's no one there. We're like, you're a week early, jerk. And by the way, and we should have known that because we saw them in LA at our party, and here's what they did.
Oh, yeah.
Pablo and his wife packed a, what was it, an Escalade?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Escalade.
An Escalade.
Not suspicious.
A rented Escalade with, you ready for it, people? $500,000 worth of liquor. And then drove it across the country on an unannounced route that they wouldn't tell anyone so that they wouldn't get knocked over like lime trucks in the cartel days.
And they stopped only like once or twice.
Oh my God. They went all the way from LA.
Right? Or it doesn't
well, they started
right.
in LA.
Okay.
They only made like two stops. It was crazy. So they arrived safely with all their liquor and all of their very, very fancy champagne, which is what Nastassia was going for, the fancy champagne. Mm-hmm. But the fun thing about this crew is they both know so much about the liquors that here's my butt munch move. I walk up to him and, you know, Jack's like, I want rum, I want beep boo and the bee and the boo boo bee bop. And so, like, Jack got a very good rum tasting. I just look at him, I go this, I hate choice. Give me something fun.
And he did.
And he did.
Yeah.
He gave me something super fun. He gave me a flight of mezcals that were all the exact same distillate made at the exact same time. Aged three different ways. And I was like, isn't it interesting? Like, aged in clay underground for different lengths of time and then held in, like, a larger glass thing for a while. I was like, you know what? That was fun. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know what I mean?
And he gave me something from West Covina.
Yeah, because that's where Nastassia's from. Yeah. Land of Good Burger. May I take your order, please? So, like, the point is that his knowledge of the products and, like, the weird kind of deep dive knowledge he has about all these rare and obscure bottles that he's bought, their provenance, right? The provenance story is always interesting, as well as the story of the individual makers and the stories behind the bottles and the different labelings and how things changed over time makes for a really good experience. So
we woke up this morning and we're like, we should have had him on the show.
Yeah, but you know what? I was thinking about this. Nastassia's like, we're dumb butts. Why didn't we ask to have him on the show? But they're real busy right now.
Yeah.
They're moving.
But you should go tonight because it's the last night and it's fun.
Yeah. Right? Now, Nastassia, you did not bring with you Applehead dolls, right?
No.
We were going to do Classics in the Field with Drina Dotson, Applehead Dolls. No, we missed it last week.
Yeah, well, it needs a good chunk of time, and we have to.
So I'll say this. One of the people we met at the Houdini party was David Karp, Karp with a K. And you should look up this guy. He writes for the LA Times periodically, and he has had many different lives over the course of his life, right? Which, I can sympathize with. And he, he's like a stockbroker, a music producer, but he's now one of the world's preeminent fruit experts. He's like a fruit explorer. What's unusual about Karp is that most of the time, pomological experts are either temperate fruit pomologists or tropical fruit pomologists, or perhaps specialists like a citrus pomologist. Karp is a lover of all. I'm going to say he's a generalist, because generalist usually is pejorative, right? Nastasia has never forgiven me for using the word pejorative
with non-English
speakers. Where I said something that was possibly insulting.
He said, your rotovap is weak. And they were like, what is weak? I mean, what is weak? And Dave was like, I mean, I don't mean it in a pejorative way. And they were like, what? And I was like, Dave, if they don't understand the word weak,
how are they going to understand pejorative?
Anyway, terrible.
So, where was I? So he has a love of all fruits. So not a generalist, but like deep dive everywhere, which is kind of rare. And, of course, something that I really like to see. He actually... you know how Nastasia and I enjoyed dates, and we had, a
the
listener
fruit.
Listener gave us a bunch of dates, and we used them years ago. He introduced us to, actually we had it before, the Barhi date. So for those of you that don't know dates, it's just some information about stuff. Dates go through many ripening stages. Most dates, when they're, fresh on the tree, are too astringent to eat properly, right? And that's called the kalal stage. But barhi dates, which were in season for like the 1 week that we were there, right, are edible in that stage. And he gave us a bunch. They're still slightly astringent, but they're their own kind of, they have kind of like this kind of almost coconutty kind of snap crunch to them. They're good. But I kept them and let them go through all the stages at home, all the way from the kalal to rutab to tamar, which is like the biggest one. And so if you have never done that, it's too late this year. To get the kalal barhis. But if you can do that next year, get them fresh and then allow them, they won't all ripen properly when they're not on the tree, but allow them to go through the stages and just taste them as they go from that kind of crunchy stage all the way through to their fully sugared stage. And it is an extremely fun experiment to do at home. But related to Applehead Dolls,
always
related to Applehead Dolls. Which, by the way, the very first toy that was ever made was most likely, according to Drina Dotson,
Adam and Eve. They had the tree. Yeah.
They were Applehead Doll aficionados, according to Drina Dotson. But we don't have her book right now. Anyways, the book that he said he happens to own, one of if not the largest pomological library in private hands. David Karp does. And so when I started talking to him about Applehead Dolls, I was like, he did not have a copy of Drina Dotson's Applehead Dolls for Pleasure and Profit. And so we showed it to him, and he's like, good find. Good find. I'll have to get that. But he said, I do own an Apple art book called Les Pommes Libertines in French, which we have ordered but don't own yet. So maybe we'll wait till we get it in. But here's how, you all know, if you've ever listened to any Cooking Issues episode, you know how Applehead Dolls work. There is an 18th century French thing, and they did it also, I think, in Asia, but a French thing where what you do is you take apples early, you put a bag around them so the sun never hits them. They grow inside the bag, but they don't color. Then in September, you cut the bag open for a couple of days, let it kind of accustom itself to having light without getting blistered. Then you paint gelatin over the whole apple and then put a stencil over it.
A pornographic stencil.
Well, I was going to get to that. You can do anything, but to be official French, like 18th century French person, it better be highly pornographic. Then it colors up, you remove the stencil, and you have like a yellowish green porno silhouette on a completely red apple. And you can, if you look up Les Pommes Libertines on the internet, you can see instructions and pictures of this. I don't like any of the modern ones. I think they should go, but like what's kind of weird is that, you know how there's little pores on apples, those little dots, and those are on the skin of the porno people. Yeah. It's like, it's real weird. It's real creepy.
So we're going to try to do that, although it's not really
in our... It's too late.
Year, but like,
next year, we need to find an apple person next year willing to bag up some apples.
If you have a tree you are willing to give to us to try this
Well,
on.
If you're close to us, we'll make the stencils, we'll bring the paper bags.
Either in New York or L.A., a tree.
Well, I'm not going to be in...
Yeah, but, well, we don't know what...
Oh,
anyway.
So a couple of things before before we get kicked off the air. Today, there might still be tickets. I don't know if there are. MoFad is teaming up with Delmonico's Restaurant. David Wunderich is coming. The chef from Delmonico's is coming. And they're going to do a sick event at MoFad about kind of the long history of Delmonico's, New York's oldest restaurant name, and like amazing history. You might have heard of such things as the Delmonico steak. Maybe you've heard of the wedge salad, the wedge. So Fabian Von Hauske from Contra Wilder, he made an eggplant hummus.
Tell the story about
and
that?
I was like, just call it a wedge salad. He's like, hands out this like baba ganoush thing. He's like, wedge salad.
Can you tell the story about the two men in
the
suits?
2 minutes. Oh,
Two men in the suits at the Houdini host.
Next week. So anyway, there might still be tickets to that. Go check it out. The Ebony Test Kitchen is now in in the MoFad for the African/American exhibit that we're working on for next year. And people, it is sick. Now, for the classics in the field that I was going to do today, which apparently I don't have time to do, I was going to do, and it's freaking sick, Alexander Kira's classic, The Bathroom. I was going to relate his classic, The Bathroom, printed first in the 60s, late 60s, 67, reissued in 76. I have the 76 version here in front of me, which has, as far as I know, the only detailed study of spatter patterns of urinals with various urinal shapes that I've ever seen. And also, the only document I have seen with full pressure diagrams for different kinds of potties for both male and female users and the correct usage of such. I was going to relate it to Taylorism in the kitchen and the Frankfurt kitchens. But maybe what we'll have to do, maybe we'll have to do a straight up only classics in the field episode once where we just handle Drina, we handle Alexander Kira, we handle the Frankfurt kitchen, and we handle like Galbraith and Taylorism in the kitchen. All fascinating subjects. I really believe, and I was going to go into a long diatribe about how architects, designers, and cooks need to get together to make the kitchen the kind of place that it can be, because how many of you out there are disappointed with your kitchen? If it's not 100%, you're not looking close enough. Cooking issues. Cooking Issues is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.